But next we have Dr. Thomas Land, who will be speaking on behalf of the team at in Massachusetts. He's the director of the Office of Statistics and the Evaluation Bureau of the Community Health and Prevention at the Massachusetts Department of Public Health. He's the principal evaluator for Mass in Motion and Community Transformation Grant Activities managed by the Massachusetts Department of Public Health. He also serves as a senior scientist for the Multi-State Collaborative for Health Systems Change. He has long-term expertise in planning, implementation, evaluation, and community health promotion programs. Here we go.
Hi, for those of you who were Wen-Jun Lee groupies and were expecting to see Wen-Jun, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but he couldn't make it today, so I'm gonna present as much of this as I can. This is a very wordy title, and I'm sure it immediately jumps out to you what this is all about. But one of the things that we've worked on in Massachusetts is trying to refine the information we have on prevalence and behavior estimates at as small a local level as possible. So that's typically called small area estimation, and there's a bit of information in this presentation about small area estimation, but it also occurred to us that in addition to looking at small area estimation, you could begin to break apart the differences in communities in order to look at how disparities sort themselves out by type of disparity across communities. And the goal of this, then, is to actually plan our activities more effectively. So if you've got one type of disparity that is more extreme in one community, you might allocate different types of resources to that community than you would to another community. So anyway, I'm going to go into this right now. So this is the investigation team. They're a fairly large group of people, in addition, who are supporting this. But Mariana Arcaya, Bonnie Andrews, and myself have also worked with Dr. Lee on these programs. This is my favorite slide because it has very little information on it. It's very easy to follow, so I'll move right on. So the learning objectives. What we're trying to do, again, is to illustrate that community-level disparities in health and behaviors are something that you can do, but you can also break them apart into smaller sub-factors. And we wanted to evaluate the domain-specific disparities and look at their overall contribution to overall disparity. So in a sense, it's not just looking at the overall level, but the proportion of disparity that's accounted for by different sources. And again, to look at the community-based strategies that might alleviate some of these disparities. So we start with the premise saying that community-level prevalence estimates are important. I hope everybody actually believes that, but in a state like Massachusetts, they are particularly important. We have 351 unique towns and cities, and we have, for the most part, no functioning county government. So being able to estimate on the local level where every single town, regardless of how small, one town has 86 people, all of them have to have a board of health. So we work with all of these boards of health. Being able to make estimates for very small towns is actually very relevant in a state like Massachusetts. It also allows us to prioritize activities, surveillance, and programmatic. So again, another premise that we need to start with is, what do we mean by a community? And so in Massachusetts, as I said, we've got 351 of them, but most people in Boston don't think of themselves strictly as a citizen of Boston. They think they live in a neighborhood. They live in Back Bay, or they live in Dorchester, Mattapan, East Boston, Roslindale. And so what we've done is we've separated Massachusetts instead of into 351 unique municipalities. We added 50 more neighborhoods across the state. So the 11 largest communities were separated into neighborhoods in order to make our estimates at a neighborhood level, which was generally more relevant to the communities at large. So here's the flow chart for how you would do small area estimation. You've got two basic sources of data. In our case, we're using survey data, which is individual level data from the Massachusetts BRFSS, the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System. But there's also community level data. So that would be information that is used in aggregate for all persons. So for example, if you responded to the BRFSS, we would link you with the information that we know about your community. What's the socioeconomic status of the people who live in it? What's the demographic breakdown? How many parks there are? How many schools there are? How many stores sell cigarettes? So we look at other community level data in order to look at and project community level prevalence and behavior. So we put this into a hierarchical logistic model, and we begin to estimate the associations between all of these elements, and then look at the population composition across all of the data elements, and this feeds into our small area estimation model. What we get with from all of this are community level prevalence estimates, as well as the trend and what, in effect, what direction all of these prevalence estimates are going. What we can do then with that is we can make pretty maps out of them, and we can identify priorities and recommend specific actions that are tailored to a community. So when I was in high school, I probably could have understood all of this, but it's been a while, and so what you've got here is this is the essential small area estimation model, and here are the individual elements that we look at in the small area estimation model. You've got town level socio-demographic variables that again would be the level of poverty in a community. You've got town level contextual effect, how many hospitals there are, how many parks there are, and you've got a town level random intercept. And so what we try to do is put all of that information together in order to make prevalence estimates for each individual city, town, or neighborhood. So this is what it looks like. This is actually a hypertension map in Massachusetts, and as you can see that there are not everything is the same. You don't have all communities having identical hypertension prevalence rates across the state. When I first started working in small area estimates, I talked to somebody about tobacco use estimates, and they were shocked that there would actually be different rates of tobacco use from one community to the next. So sometimes all you're really trying to do with something like this is show people that there are different colors on a map, and that leads them to the conclusion that they need to actually work on these work differently with these different communities. So as again, it's nice to know what the overall disparities are, but what we really want to know is where they come from. What do we specifically need to do to address disparities in a particular community? So again, we look at demographic, socioeconomic, and contextual factors separately. This is the larger small area estimate model when we are decomposing by different types of disparity variation. And so we're looking at personal level demographic variables. Again, you picked up the phone, you answered the BRFSS, you answered your own questions about your own demographics. Then we've got person level socioeconomic variables, then town level contextual and town level random effects. So this all put together allows us to make look at how the individual contributes to the estimates locally and how the town itself contributes to it. So these are, again, the breakdown of the small area estimates. As I said before, you've got two different types of estimates that you can get, or two different ways that you can look at this. You can look at the absolute or the relative contributions of town level estimates to small area estimates. So here are the absolute. It says town relative, but it actually should be. I think this is the absolute level. So you've got demographic, socioeconomic, and contextual, and you can come up with a town level disparity index, which is essentially the sum of all the disparities for that town. And these are, again, the relative contributions. And this is the relative percentage contribution to it. On the right-hand side of the equation, you divide by the R1, the R sub I factor, which is essentially the total amount. So, for example, if you have a town that has very good infrastructure, but has a high level of poverty, you would essentially those two types of disparities might cancel each other out, and it would look. It would appear to people as if there was no disparity in that community, but the two cancel each other out. By looking at the relative percent contribution, you would see that there are canceling out proportions of this that allow you to look at the disparities in a way that are more effective for public health planning. So again, this is the data that we put together for the hypertension estimates on the map that you saw earlier. We look at person-level factors like age, race, ethnicity, education, income, and then town-level contextual factors like income and type of employment and housing density. So a lot of these models will end up being extremely complicated. They can have dozens and dozens of factors, but these are the ones that we put into the hypertension model. As you can see on the right-hand side, virtually large numbers of these variables are significant, so they all, most of them contribute to the accuracy of the estimates. And we're back to this. This is, again, the same slide from slide 16, where the relative contributions to town-level disparity. This is the actual formula that is used to estimate the relative contributions. And so this is the pretty map of what it looks like when you break down the decomposition. And my favorite part of this slide is all the little numbers on the side, which are impossible to read. But my first impression when I saw this is that if you looked at this, probably most people would think that, say, they live in Lexington, Massachusetts. Lexington, Massachusetts may be on the bottom half of the overall map. Most people would assume that Lexington is in roughly the same place across all of these different maps. But honestly, what we have found is that the towns in Massachusetts, there's very little relationship between the different types of disparity. And I think this may be the next slide. So what here's how the neighborhoods of Worcester, Massachusetts. Worcester is a town in central Massachusetts that has, I don't know, 100 and some thousand people in it. And what we find in the different neighborhoods, these are broken down by zip code. There should be a zero on the outer edge of that. So 03484 has a significant number of disparities in both the composition in SES and the neighborhood contextual factors. But if you look at 03488, which is roughly at the bottom, they have canceling out. So the overall disparity for that neighborhood would appear to be zero. But in fact, for the neighborhood contextual factors, it's actually a significant amount of disparity that is seen in that neighborhood. So if we were planning programs in that area, we would plan something very different for that community than we would plan for 03484. So as I said, this is the plot of all of the relationship between the contextual and compositional factors for it. And if you remember your plots from statistics class, that doesn't look like much of a correlation to me. So it's all pretty much a circle. And so I think what we're trying to say is that this tells you that it's really important to look at to break down disparities. If this was highly correlated, if all of them followed, if they were roughly on a straight line across that diagonal, then all disparities would be intercorrelated with each other, and you would not need to know them individually. But the fact that this is a fairly random distribution of dots on the map indicates that disparities need to be treated separately. So again, breaking it down to all four different types of components in the Worcester neighborhoods, demographic, socioeconomic, contextual, and then the unexplained factor, again, you see that the plot of these are very different. So on the right hand, on the 03488, which is at the bottom, you can see that what we're doing, we're breaking down the contextual factor into the socioeconomic and the town level contextual factor. And again, they have different proportions of variance associated with them. So we might look at something that has a town level contextual factor and say, look, they just don't have enough parks in this community in order to address the need for people to walk more often and reduce the rate of hypertension. So they may look at developing walking trails in a community like that, whereas something that has very little contextual factor, they might approach the intervention from a public health perspective in a very different way. So this is where you can see the difference paired up side by side against each other. So 03488, which is again at the bottom, appears to have no disparity at all when you look at the total amount of disparity, but when you look at the four levels of breakdown, you can see that there are significant portions of disparity that would need to be addressed in a town like, in a community like the neighborhood 03488. And you can, again, see that some of these reverse sides, you've got some on one side of the axis and some on the other, so again, the planning would required to implement programs ought to be different in these different neighborhoods. So the limitations of working in this area are that you have to start with a well-built model. You can't have a lousy small area estimates prediction and then be able to break apart the disparities and do well and make effective judgments about what the different levels of disparities are. So, for example, if you can't predict, what we do in Massachusetts is we make estimates by, say, the county level, and there may be 15 or 20 towns in a county. And so we aggregate up to the county level, and if our estimates of the individual town-level estimates don't add up to the county-level estimate within a certain tolerance, then our model is not very effective. So we try to do a lot of different tests of the model to determine that the overall estimates are accurate enough in order to break apart the variance of the disparities. So again, having incomplete information about the individual and community level contextual data is again a potential weakness of any approach like this. So if the data we have on stores that sell cigarettes and we're trying to predict smoking rates in a community, if it's incomplete or it's inaccurate, again, the data, the projections that come out of a model like this would be proportionately inaccurate. And again, it's limited to the individual variables that are available in the BRFSS. So if the BRFSS or some state-level population survey doesn't ask the questions you want, you can't do the small area estimates, and then you can't do the disparities decomposition. So I guess the conclusions are that this can be done. People can make they can break apart disparities into component parts in order to plan differently. It's fairly efficient in summarizing complex data, but I guess the more important point is that there's going to be a lot of discussion today and the next few days about how little money we all have. And if we're trying to target our resources, being able to know where the disparities are and what type of disparities they are and what the overall burden in a community is extremely accurate. It's extremely important. If we essentially distribute our money equally to all communities, that's an inefficient model in a time of shrinking resources. So we need to be able to target resources better in order to plan more effective programs. And what we're doing right now is that we are using this, Tara mentioned the Mass in Motion program and the community transformation projects. Our planning for each of these programs includes a breakdown of disparities community by community. We're in 52 towns and cities in Massachusetts, and we look at the sub-level disparities by type for each of those communities. I think Secretary Polanowicz mentioned the Prevention Wellness Trust programs in Massachusetts in his keynote speech this morning, and that's again a program that we are looking at working in individual communities intensively, and we want to be able to make sure that we're spending our money as wisely as possible. And I think it's just generally important for almost any community health program. And thank you.